Hi, I'm Brandy from The Inspiring Bee. Today I'm talking with Laurie Ann Thompson, the author of multiple children's books, including the Two Truths and a Lie series and Elizabeth Warren's Big Bold Plans. Hey, hi Laurie, I'm so glad to have you here. I'm so impressed by you and all the books that you've done. By the way, how many children's books have you written right now?
I have 7 books published so far, and they range in age from like preschool all the way up through teenagers.
Wow. I was reading a little bit about your background, and it's so interesting because it doesn't sound like you started off wanting to go into writing for children, because you have a degree in mathematics. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. I started out as a software engineer.
Wow. And I mean, that says you're smart for sure to do that.
Gotten for punishment, maybe. I've always been a storyteller. My mom likes to tell me how I would always, you know, make up stories with my stuffed animals and act things out for her. And I was always a big reader, so the story's always been a really big part of my life. Mm-hmm. But I never really, I don't know. I grew up in a really small town in northern Wisconsin and had never met an author. And so it just wasn't something that I even considered as a career. Like, I didn't even know it was possible. My degree is in applied mathematics, but I nearly finished. I had one more class, a minor in technical writing. Because even then I knew that I enjoyed words and language and writing and wanted to find a way to turn that into a career. But again, I never saw myself as an author and certainly not a children's book author. So yeah, that came about later. And it was when I had my own kids that I started reading books to them that it took me right back to when I was a kid and how much I loved children's books and how important they were to me when I was growing up. And, I just decided that is what I wanted to do with my life and made a big career change. I was not working at the time because I was staying home to raise my children. So that gave me the time to kind of experiment and see if it was something that I felt comfortable doing, that I wanted to stick with, and that I could make work eventually. So I was really lucky to have that opportunity.
That seems like it'd be a huge shift. Like, I mean, you have a technical writing background, but was it a really big change for you?
What's funny is no. You know, people say that all the time, like, oh, so different to go from computer programming to writing children's books. And it seems like it at first, but to me, they're really, really similar. In both cases, it requires a lot of creativity. Mm-hmm. In both cases, it requires a lot of thinking logically and problem solving and sequencing, being able to put things in the right order. And it's also, in both cases, you know, it's using symbols, it's using a language to create something that didn't exist before. So to me, I find them really similar. Like using code to make a computer program is really no different than using words to make a story. It's just putting things together to achieve the desired result, you know? I find them really similar processes in the way that I approach them anyway.
I would never have thought that there's similarities like that. That's so interesting. And when you began the process of writing books, you started with a picture book. Is that the first story that you started writing?
I actually started with, I was trying to write a middle grade book that was a collection of stories about people that they're part of the world in some really interesting, unique way, but that maybe we don't know their names. You know, they didn't become famous for whatever reason, and their stories have never been told. I'm a huge underdog fan, and I love to find those untold stories and try to give them the recognition that they deserve. And so I was working on this compilation of stories and kind of got a lot of feedback from agents that it wasn't going to fly. Nobody was going to be interested in publishing a book about people that no one has ever heard of. And, you know, this was a long time ago, yeah. and I think today it might have a better shot. I think kind of they're looking for those unique perspectives and stories that haven't been told, but at the time, that wasn't the case. And so I kept hearing again and again and again that that book wasn't going to work. But a lot of people really liked this one story that was in that book about Emmanuel Ofosu Yeboah, and suggested that I pull that out and make it a picture book. And I had never thought about writing picture books. Picture books are a really different beast, and I didn't think I had what it took to do that. And so that was really daunting to me when they said, oh, why don't you pull this out and make it a picture book, because I didn't know how to do that. So I had to embark on this whole new journey of learning what a picture book is and what makes it work, and how, you know, I could do that with this story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I had never envisioned that it would become a picture book. But as I was doing that self-teaching and, you know, reading hundreds of picture books, to try to figure it all out for myself, I really fell in love with them. And it's really where my heart is now. I just love picture books, and I love writing them, and I love reading them still. So I'm really glad for that advice, because it really pointed me down this career path that I don't think I would have considered otherwise. And it really forced me to learn something new and challenging. But I really just love it. I think it's just such a wonderful art form, and such a puzzle, you know, talking about problem solving and programming. Mm-hmm. You know, a picture book is a puzzle that you just have to sit down and solve and
work that's on. Exactly what I was thinking in my head. It's a puzzle. And that idea, that chapter in your middle grade became the Emmanuel's dream. Is that correct? Is that the story? Yeah. That's so impressive.
Exactly. Yeah. And then that book also became my first published book, which is the book for teens, which is called Be a Changemaker, How to Start Something That Matters. In that, you know, part of what I was trying to do with that initial idea was show young readers that they could change the world, that they could make a difference. And so rather than do it in that way with all of these case studies of unknown people, I turned it into a little bit more of a hands-on guidebook, you know, filled with all kinds of practical advice. And it does have case studies in there, but it became so much more. And so that became actually my first published book, which is a YA nonfiction for teens. So yeah, that one project that didn't end up going anywhere turned into two that were my first two published books.
Wow. I mean, people think that, you know, when they write, like, what's the sense? This is never going to get published. But everybody, I mean, everything that you write, as long as you're writing it down, will have some kind of purpose later on. And I think you said some things I was so interested to hear more about. Like, when you wrote the middle grade and you were getting feedback, like, how much time had you been spending writing that already?
Probably, a few years.
That's pretty fast, actually, to me, because you were getting responses, right? And even though they were not acceptances, they sound like they're positive responses because you got feedback.
Right. And I think, you know, initially it didn't start out that way, right? Mm-hmm. You build and you build. It was the first thing I had tried to write. And so I had a huge learning curve, even though I had taken technical writing classes and had done a lot of reading. I didn't know anything about children's book publishing and how the industry worked and what people were looking for. So it was really all new to me, and I was starting from square one. So, you know, the initial feedback was pretty basic stuff, and you just keep building on that and keep revising and keep bringing it back. And, yeah, eventually I got to where they were like, oh, this is really good writing. I'm not going to be able to sell it, but you know, try this approach and see if that works. And so, yeah, it's just a lot of persistence and a lot of trial and error, and feedback is just so critical. You just can't get anywhere without constant feedback.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you said that it took you about 10 years to get to where you are, and I was so, like, impressed by that. I think, I mean, every author that I talk to, I'm just in awe of them, because I think getting published is such a difficult thing to do. I mean, it seems easy to write a picture book, but it's not. I think they actually said it's probably one of the hardest things to write. And it's the first thing that I wanted to write because I feel the same with you that I think picture books are so meaningful and it's like a piece of art. Like, I just love picture books. And so I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
But in that 10 years, I mean, what were you telling yourself to get through the hard parts, like the rejections and not getting anywhere and the writer's block or whatever was going through in those times?
I think I was really lucky. For one thing, the story that I was working on was this true story of Emmanuel Afosi Yeboah, mm-hmm. who
I love that book, by the way. Sorry, I just want to tell you I love that book. It's so inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Well, then you're familiar with his story. You know that, you know, he was born with a disability, mm-hmm. and he was frustrated with how people in his country with disabilities were treated. And so he, you know, with one good leg, got a bicycle and rode almost 400 miles all around Ghana to show them that being disabled doesn't mean being unable, and really convince them that they needed to take another look at what they were doing. And he did, and he got them to pass, you know, a Persons with Disabilities Act that, you know, second to none really in the world, and really made such a huge difference. And so I was writing his story of persistence and determination, mm-hmm. and courage, and because that was the story that I had in front of me every day, I felt like, how could I possibly give up and walk away from my dream when my dream was telling his story, and he didn't give up, right?
Wow.
So I think I was really fortunate that was kind of the first story I picked to focus on because that was the example that I had in front of me every single day.
Yeah.
And it really inspired me and kept me going. And that's the reason that I was attracted to it in the first place is that I thought it would inspire kids and keep them going. And so, yeah, I think I was just really fortunate that was the story I was working on because I could not give up when he didn't.
Can you believe that was your first, picture book, right? That got published. It was, and it was so well received and it was so good. I mean, I was going to ask you too about like writing, it's a biography. Like, how did you learn how to do that? Like you said you were self-taught. What were you reading?
Yeah, I also took, you know, a lot of classes. A member of SCBWI, the Society for Children's Writers and Illustrators. Mm-hmm. So I was constantly taking classes. I was constantly getting feedback. I was constantly, you know, reading books and looking at awards lists and analyzing why things worked or didn't. Not entirely self-taught because I did take a lot of classes and go to a lot of workshops and things. So, but I didn't have a formal education in it. You know, I'm not an English major. I don't have an MFA, all of those things. So I really did have a lot to learn. And I first heard about Emmanuel's story in 2005. And I didn't get an agent until 2011, so it took me 6 years to get an agent. It took another 2 years before we sold the book, so the book sold in 2013. And then we did more revisions, and the book finally was published in 2015.
Wow, that's a long process. That's a long process.
So, you know, and I was working on other things during those 10 years. It wasn't like I was just working on that one book and nothing else. I was learning about the industry and I was querying agents and there were a lot of different things I was doing, but it was all kind of part of it, you know? And yeah, it just took a long time to figure it all out. You know, the picture book format, people don't realize that there's a set number of pages, usually 32, sometimes 40 or 48. And you don't want to be repetitive with your images. You don't want to have the same picture on every page. So you have to write a story that fits into exactly that many pages with that many pictures, and each picture has to be different. So, you know, you can't just tell a story that takes place in the classroom. Mm-hmm. You've got to move them around. You've got to do other things. You know, it can't just take place at the dinner table. There's so much complexity there to have the right number of images, and that the images don't duplicate what's in the words, but that they match it, and that there's a variety of images to carry the whole book. It's a really complex jigsaw puzzle.
Yes. And even I was going to ask you, like, how did you know what to include? Because it's a biography. Like, how did you know what to extract from the information, the research that you're doing?
Right. And there was a lot of research there. There was a lot that I didn't end up using, for sure. And it just comes down to, you do all the research, and then you kind of take a look at what you have and what you're trying to say. For me, kind of one of the big breakthroughs was figuring out why I couldn't give up on this story. Why did this story touch me in the first place? And why was it so important to me that kids know this story? And kind of all the extra research that I had done, all those other details that I had, if they didn't kind of fit that why, then they weren't important. They didn't belong in my story. And so that's how you go through and you cut. You just, does this help tell the story that I'm trying to tell? You know, somebody else could come and write about the same subject from a completely different angle, and use all those parts that I cut out, and it could still be a fantastic story. It's just not the one that I needed to tell. And so I think that's one of the lessons that I learned through doing that book, is to kind of start there with really asking myself why. Mm-hmm. Why is this important to me? What do I want the reader to take away from reading this book? And then that really helps me winnow everything else out that doesn't need to be there.
That's great. I mean, it's good. It's a good advice, I think, for other writers too, to ask yourself why. Was there a lot of revisions for this one?
Oh yeah. You can imagine it over that many years. I think if I remember, I should go through and count again, but I counted once and I had 23 like complete restarts, major revisions. And of course there were lots of little tweaks and revisions in between for each of those 23 kind of fresh new approaches. And then after it sold, we did 3 more in addition.
Wow.
So yeah. And even those were fairly large, especially the first one. Lots of revising. If you count all the smaller ones, I'm sure I have over 100 revisions of that manuscript.
That takes a lot of perseverance and resilience to go through that, because I mean, just from my own experience, like just revising and editing, sometimes you just feel like giving up and you're like, how much times have I changed the story? Did you have people in your life, like other writers that were kind of maybe beta readers or critique group that was kind of supporting you through this too?
Yeah, I have an amazing critique group, and we all started at roughly the same place. We were all beginners. We all had, you know, different jobs, and we were doing this as kind of an attempt at a career change or a sideline. And years, we all, you know, stuck with it and kept educating ourselves and kept getting better and better. And now every single one of us in the group has a book published.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Many of us have agents.
Wow.
So, yeah, we've been together a long, long time. Yeah. And having a great critique group is just invaluable. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know where I'd be without them.
How did
not
you
only
find
for
yours?
The feedback and the critique, but the cheerleading, you know, mm-hmm. and you go in and you're like, I'm just going to give up. This yeah. is ridiculous. And they talk you out of it. And, you know, yes. We're really there for each other in terms of all kinds of support. You know, when somebody has a book launch, we all show up. And so it's just been really wonderful to have them, both from a professional and a personal mm-hmm. standpoint.
How did you find your critique group?
Through SCDWI.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I know what you mean, because I just started, I was looking for a long time and I just found one that I really click with. And oh my gosh, it feels like for how many years I've been working the same story, and then suddenly I find my critique group and it's like so much better. I'm like, why didn't I find one sooner? Cut so many years off of the process. Yeah.
Yeah. It is important to find one that you click with. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to happen right away necessarily. You might have to try a few different approaches, you know, and there's lots of different ways to run a critique group, you know, online or in person. Do you read a whole book at a time, you know, if you're doing novels, or do you just read a chapter at a time? You know, how often do you meet? All those kinds of things. There's so many different ways that a critique group can happen. And so, yeah, you might have to try a few before you do find one that really clicks, but boy, when you do, you know how valuable they are.
Oh my gosh, I'm surprised. It's almost like a secret, like I did, like an underground secret that I didn't know. I mean, until I started talking to all these authors and everybody has a critique group. But it was like so eye-opening that it can really make a difference. I was thinking, how did I think I was going to do this on my own? Yeah, it's really invaluable. And I was going to ask you also, how did you find your agent?
There's, agent query on the internet, you know, where you can see what everybody's looking for, and following agents on Twitter to see kind of who they're representing and what types of books they like. That's what led me to my agent ultimately, was I had one in particular author that I really admired his work. And really liked the things he was doing. And so I really went after his agent. Like, I kind of fixated on her and decided that she was the agent that I had to have. Mm-hmm. and ultimately, eventually I was able to get the manuscript that eventually became Emmanuel's Dream in front of her. And she said, oh, I really like this, but it's too similar to this other author that I was really admiring and really trying to emulate, because I respected his book so much. And so that was great, because she was comparing me to him.
Yeah.
But she said, I don't want to take on another author that's
similar,
so much like him, when I already have him.
Oh, man.
So, but luckily, she had a newer agent working for her, and she said, you know, Joan is looking for somebody exactly like this, do you mind if I hand it off to her? And she did, and we really clicked.
That's
so
great.
I think it all worked out for the best. I think that's a really good way to do it, is look at authors who you respect and admire and whose work you like, and see who their agent is, and start there. It's an often overlooked path, but you can find that out either online or Publishers Marketplace, or sometimes you can check in the back for the acknowledgments and things and find out who their agent is.
So yeah, I think the process
really
of finding
that.
Yeah, I mean, those are good tips too. I think the process of finding agent can be so intimidating. You know, I'm in a lot of writing groups on Facebook and things, and it's scary. You have to just kind of remember that agents are just people too, you know. And just like publishers and but it's great how you found your agent and it was a good fit. I know sometimes it doesn't work out, but it's a relationship, right? I mean, you've had your agent for at least 6 years.
So let's see, I signed with her in 2011, so it's been 9 years now.
Oh, 9 years. Wow. So you do have to find somebody that really fits with you, because that's a long time.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it's really an important relationship to making a career. So, yep. It's good to do your research, and I would really recommend that if you get an offer from someone, that you ask to talk to some of their clients, you know, get referrals, talk to other authors and find out who their agents are and do they like them? Do they recommend them? That can be real insight.
Yeah. Was there anything surprising about the process of publishing books? Like I'm wondering if you have to do a lot of social media marketing, things like that.
I mean, it's always helpful, but there's also, you know, plenty of examples of people who don't, and they do just fine. So I think it's whatever you're comfortable with.
If
you're not comfortable doing social media, you're going to hurt yourself by doing it.
Yeah.
I think the best advice is just to do what feels natural to you and what you enjoy, because it'll come through.
Have you done like, you know, the author talks? Oh, sorry.
What's that?
Have you done like author visits, you know, at schools and things like that too?
Yeah, At first I was really nervous about doing that because I've never really been much of a public speaker. That's always been kind of my biggest fear. And I just went into it thinking that, okay, this is, you know, something that I really, really want is to be an author, and doing school visits will help me build that career, and so I'm going to give it a try. And I worked really hard to become a better speaker and to get over my utter panic
being
in front of an audience.
Oh my God, yeah.
And now it's one of my favorite parts of the job.
Wow.
I love doing school visits, and I love interacting with the kids and teachers, and seeing how teachers are using my books. It's so rewarding. So I've really come all the way around to the other side now, and just school visits are so much fun, and they're so energizing. I just come away with this just walking on air feeling of, it's just so wonderful to have that opportunity and to be out there like that. So, yeah, I think, you know, I don't think anybody has to do it if they're really not comfortable and they don't enjoy it. But I would definitely say try it. You might be surprised.
Yeah. So did it take do you just have to keep doing it, like just practice and then eventually got over the fear?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It started out doing classroom visits, you know, so I was just talking to the 20, 30 kids, and then worked up to doing the big assemblies and the gymnasiums full of kids and things like that. But the more you do it, the easier it gets, the more confidence you get. A lot of the hardest parts are having a presentation that you're giving for the first time. And so once you have a presentation that you feel good about, that you can just deliver over and over and over again, you can get more and more comfortable. So there's lots of tricks to make it easier on yourself and still deliver a great presentation. So, yeah, I think you just build up to it. And one of my favorite phrases is feel the fear and do it anyway.
I love that. Yes, I think for a lot of authors are like, we're introverts, right? So the idea of like speaking is so terrifying. Even if it's
really, and I had that more than most. I'm very introverted and very shy, and so yeah, the thought of public speaking, nothing scared me more than that.
Yeah.
And yeah, just practice and building up to it slowly so that you can increase your experience. And yeah, it becomes second nature. It becomes, you know, easy and even fun and enjoyable.
Yeah, so it's well worth it, I think.
I still get nervous, but now it's the good kind of nerves, you know?
Exciting,
like the nerves
kind.
You get when you're about to go on a roller coaster.
Yeah. and kids are so, they're good audiences, right? I mean, they'll tell you the truth, so you can just kind of be yourself around them. And I mean, has things changed for you since the pandemic, too? Are you doing more online things?
Yeah, absolutely. Typically, at the end of a school year, you know, teachers want to kind of reward the kids. They want to have some fun. They know that the kids are not necessarily into, you know, fully engaged learning mode in the last few weeks of school. Mm-hmm. And so normally I'm getting a lot of in-person visits the last 2 months, really, of school. And once they get past their testing, you know, that they have to do, they're allowed to do some other things. But this year, yeah, you know, those all got canceled, everything fizzled. But luckily, a lot were able to pivot to doing online visits, and I did a whole bunch of them right in the last month, really. And it was so fun. The kids are so great.
Yeah.
You know, the kids are all sitting in their pajamas, holding their stuffed animals, and pets are wandering through, and baby brothers, and you know,
that's cute.
It's utter chaos, but yeah. At the same time, it's like, yeah, we're all in this together, guys. And you know, it was really, really fun.
That's nice.
To connect in that way.
Yeah. Is it different? Is it a different connection than being in person?
It is a different connection for sure. And I think there's a really big difference between when you're doing a virtual visit with just one classroom's worth of kids, so you can see everybody's faces and gauge how they're reacting to what you're saying and maybe have some interactivity, versus, you know, if you're trying to give a virtual presentation to hundreds of kids at the same time, like, you know, in more of a webinar format where you're just talking at them.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot harder because you don't get that audience feedback. You're not sure if they're still with you. You know, if they've turned off the camera and they're just, you know, playing on their phones, you don't have any idea whether you're still keeping them engaged. So I think that's actually a lot harder to do a large group virtually than to do a large group in person.
I never really thought that. I would think maybe, just thinking maybe less like scary because you're sitting in your house, but that's true. Like, you don't have that connection. You're just talking to the screen and the people.
You're just talking to your camera. And it's one thing I've really come to love about doing the in-person visits is you get that energy back from the audience. You know, you're putting out a lot of energy, but you're also getting it back. You get to see them engaged, and it's really exciting. But with these big virtual visits, you're putting it out and nothing.
That's so interesting. Yeah. Maybe that's why it's so draining, because I hear a lot. I did an article about it and about telemedicine, and it seems like a lot of people are saying it's draining. But so maybe that's why.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It is, because it's when you're performing in front of an audience, you're performing, but you're getting it back. And when you're performing for a screen, you're not getting anything back. Mm. It's just performing. It's all performance, and then, you know, it's just over, and you don't even know how it went at the end. So I really prefer with the virtual visits to do the smaller groups, even if I have to do a lot more visits to talk to as many kids, because I think it just works so much better for everybody.
Yeah, and you don't get the reward of seeing, like, or feeling their, how they feel when you're, like, speaking with them, right? I think that's missing.
Exactly, yeah.
So I know you've written,
I still do them, and it's still, you know, it's still fun to do, and I'm still interested in doing those kinds of things, but it feels a lot different than an in-person one. In that regard,
I know, hopefully we can get back to in person. I don't know, in the near future, but I wanted to ask you too, you've written so many different types of books. Like, you also have fiction, and I know you have the Two Truths and a Lie series, and then that new book, Elizabeth Warren's Big Bold Plans, that looks really good. I want to get that book too. But anyway, how is it different for you as an author to write different types of books, and also for different ages too?
Yeah, I found that for me, it's really helpful to have sort of a longer form nonfiction project at the same time that I'm working on the picture books, just because they really do challenge me in different ways. Mm-hmm. And when I get stuck on one, I can switch to the other, and I can keep making progress on something.
I know, it feels like you're at least one of them, right? You're making progress if one is stuck.
Exactly. Rather than just being stuck and getting frustrated being stuck, it's nice for me to be able to go back and forth, and that way I kind of never get stuck, because I always have something I can work on. Mm-hmm. I find them I find them really complementary in that way, and I like to always have a couple different projects going because of that. Because they just are so different. Mm. But a lot of times it's mostly because I just get curious about a topic.
Oh.
Or I have an idea, and the more I start to either just think about, you know, what is it that I'm trying to say, why do I care, the more I realize that, oh, you know, that can't be a picture book, right? It's just not appropriate for that age group, or, you know, or that would be a perfect picture, whatever. You know, sometimes it's just driven by the topic that this is something that I'm really curious about, that I want to learn more about, that I want to share with readers. What kinds of readers should I share it with? And so a lot of times it's dictated by the topic itself.
Is the actual process of writing fiction versus nonfiction different, though, for you?
Yeah. Nonfiction feels more like curating. Like, I'm finding all the research and the facts and the information and then assembling it into a story. Whereas fiction is a very different beast because I'm creating it. It's imagination.
Yeah.
So really, really different processes.
How do you get your ideas? I know you mentioned that. I wanted to ask you too.
Yeah, my favorite advice for that is just to keep a list. And I've got several. I've got lists on my phone and lists on my computer. And whenever I see something that either makes me curious, I want to know more, I wonder why it is that way, or that makes me have some kind of strong emotional reaction. And that might be a positive emotional reaction, like, wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. It might be a really negative one, like, ooh, that makes me so mad. Mm. you know, anything that either makes me curious or makes me react with an emotion, I put it on that list because that means it has a lot of potential
as a book idea.
And that could be fiction or nonfiction. It's anything that I run into that raises one of those two issues is kind of like, beep, 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 you know, alarms go off. And I have to make sure that I write that down to come back to later.
Are you working on anything currently?
Oh, I'm always working on
too many things. Yeah, you sound like me. Yeah,
I have, two nonfiction books that I'm working on now that I'm revising. I'm revising one fiction picture book. And I have a middle grade nonfiction that I'm working on right now, too.
Wow, so are you really good about keeping like a schedule what you're writing?
No. I should be better.
But you're doing it. Like, you're motivating yourself. I mean, it takes a lot of self-motivation, right?
Yeah, I guess in that sense, I do keep a schedule in that one of the things that is really important to me is every year I will do an annual review. Like, you know, around Christmas or New Year's, either at the end of the year or right at the start of the year, where I look back at kind of everything that I did for the previous year, and kind of look at the state of where everything's are, and then make a map for, okay, what are my priorities for the coming year? What do I really want to get done? Mm-hmm. And I kind of keep that in front of me all year. Like, you know, like, ooh, I said in January that I wanted to finish this revision and I haven't looked at it and it's almost July, you know. Like, I better get going on that. So I do that kind of the highlight, the big picture things. I don't really break it down on a small scale, like, you know, like a day or a week level, like how many hours. I don't really track that, but I do kind of look at it from a project standpoint that I wanted to have these three books out this year and I'm not there yet. And sometimes things happen that change that. Like the Elizabeth Warren Big Bold mm-hmm. Plan wasn't a book that I had intended to write. That was a complete surprise to me. And I met an editor that worked for Simon & Schuster And we connected, but not over the manuscript that I had shown her that day. But she remembered me, and she remembered my writing. And so she came back later and said, hey, we'd really like the Elizabeth Warren book. Would you be willing to write it for us?
Wow.
And it was, you know, she was already in the campaign, and so it was a hurry up, fast turnaround, you know, we want it as soon as you can deliver it kind of thing. And so I had to drop everything I was working on and focus 100% on that book and get something done really quickly. And so, I'm a little bit behind on the project that I wanted to do, but I have a book that I didn't know I would have. That's completely acceptable.
It is. You're doing a lot. Wow, congratulations on that book, too. It looks really good.
Thank you. Yeah, that was so much fun to do. And, I love those happy surprises like that. That was really great.
It's exciting, right? And the life of a writer is not always, like, the most exciting or glamorous, but then you have big surprises like that. It's awesome. I know we're getting to the end here, and I just wanted to ask you a few more questions. One is if you have a favorite book that you'd like to recommend. And then also if you have any resources that you think would be helpful for someone who's interested in writing picture books or children's books.
Yeah, I have so many favorite books to recommend.
I know, me too.
That's such a tough one. two of the books that I really leaned on a lot when I was writing Emmanuel's Dream were When Marion Sang by Pam Munoz-Ryan.
I'm gonna check that out. And
Wilma Unlimited by Kathleen Kroll. I really use those two books as my mentor texts for how to write a picture book biography. Those are the two that I just found so compelling, and that I really learned a lot from. You know, I typed in the text in a file and saw where the page breaks were, and really just I spent so much time analyzing those two books and what I thought made them great so that I could take those lessons and apply them to Emmanuel's Dream. And, you know, I think that's one of the key things to do as a growing writer and as a continuing writer, I still do that, is when I find a book that just takes my breath away, you know, enjoy that moment of taking your breath away and just feeling it, but then turn around and analyze it and really pick it apart and understand what makes it work. So those two were the ones for that book. And then resources for writers who want to write picture books is Anne Whitford Paul's, I think it's just called Writing Picture Books. But it's Anne Whitford Paul, and it's just the best resource for writing picture books that you'll find anywhere. It's fabulous.
Well, great. Thank you so much. This has been so illuminating, like, talking with you. You've gave me so much ideas and information, and I'm just really an honor to talk to you, actually, because when I saw all the lists of books you wrote, I was really impressed and was just honored to be able to talk to you and that you took the time to talk with me today. So thank you so much, Laurie. It was really fun.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm so glad we connected. I really love seeing what you're doing, and I think it's really awesome. So I'm really glad to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you.